talk for, give some intro, then we'll break into small groups. And what we've done here is taken out some of the chairs so that you could have like a group of eight of you or so, eight, something like that. And you'll discuss the scenario that I give you. And then I'll give some more intro of how it might be different if we actually prepare for these catastrophes. And then you'll, again, break into the small groups and discuss what you think would happen. And then we'll come back together and discuss results. So you'll have to, we'll keep you on time. So just a little background on Alliance to Feed the Earth in Disasters. Many people on our team are actually in the UK. Other people are in the US. Mentioned the book Feeding Everyone No Matter What, and AllFed is looking both at the research side, but also the real-world practical preparedness and planning. And some more background on what AllFed does. If you look at a spectrum of global food production shock, most effort is on catastrophes or disasters that only have a roughly 1% loss in food production, like that happened in 2007, 2008. So we don't focus on that. We do focus on scenarios that could cause a roughly 10% reduction in food production. So these are things like a volcanic eruption like that caused the year without a summer in 1816, where there was famine in parts of Europe. A number of other disasters, like super weed. And then we also look at disasters that could completely block the sun, like nuclear winter. But then the focus of today is these scenarios that could disrupt electricity. And since pretty much everything else is dependent on electricity, like pulling fossil fuels out of the ground, then possibly a collapse of industrial civilization. So some background. The emphasis within EA has been on existential risks, which many times people associate with outright extinction. Now, these agricultural catastrophes are unlikely to cause outright extinction. However, there are the original definition of existential risk from Nick Bostrom was not just extinction, but a significant reduction in the potential of humanity in the long term. And so if one of these global catastrophes were to destroy civilization and we didn't recover from it, that actually would constitute an existential risk because we have not attained our potential as humanity. And there are a number of reasons why if we lose civilization, we might not recover it. For instance, we've already burned the easily accessible fossil fuels, and fossil fuels were important in creating industrial civilization. We've also had a stable climate for the last 10,000 years. We might not be so fortunate in the future. And then another possible way of having far future impact is that if one of these catastrophes happen and things go poorly, then the trauma from the catastrophe could make us nastier, and maybe we're more likely to have future catastrophes, or maybe those worst values end up in AI and are locked in. So it's another way of having far future impact. All right, so that's background on GCR and AllFed. Now I'll quickly go over the scenario. So we've mentioned solar storms. What happened in 1859, the Carrington event? We basically only had telegraphs at the time. Didn't have much electricity, but it did disrupt telegraphs. In order to disrupt electricity globally, it would have to be a more severe event. But there actually have been more severe events than what happened in 1859, two of them in the last 2,000 years. So that could, and a solar storm will burn out transformers connected to long electric lines. Now, the next scenario is the high-altitude electromagnetic pulse, which means a nuclear weapon detonated at high altitude creates an electromagnetic pulse. And there, you destroy not just transformers, but pretty much anything plugged into the grid. So, like, computers would be fried, and even large vehicles. And most of the emphasis is on just a single electromagnetic pulse. But if there were multiple around the world, it could potentially disrupt electricity globally. And then the third category that could disrupt electricity globally is a narrow AI cyber attack or computer virus. And one computer virus already did disrupt electricity locally. But actually, for today, we're going to focus on what we call the approximately 10% loss of electricity and industry. And so here, then, we are talking perhaps something like the size of the Carrington event. The solar storms tend to affect the high latitudes more strongly. So it might be that high northern countries or states, in the case of Alaska, where I live, but Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, Estonia, Latvia, Denmark, maybe parts of other countries could have their electricity disrupted. That might be around a 1 in 100 chance per year. Or we could have a single EMP, like over North America or Europe. And you would not only lose roughly 10% of your industrial capability, but those areas produce a lot of food. And as you'll see, if you don't have industrial agriculture, you can't produce as much food. So it's likely to be a 10% reduction in global food production at the same time. Similarly, the cyber attack could affect a continent instead of globally. And there's also been some talk about attacks that might be aimed at disrupting the internet. And if we lost the internet, it wouldn't be as bad as losing all of electricity, but still many processes are dependent on the internet. So this could be something like a 10% disruption in our industrial capability. And then finally, if we had a conventional world war that did not go nuclear for some reason, that could be a 10% destruction of industry. So here are some pretty pictures of the five scenarios. That's a solar storm down there. That's an EMP. Okay, so now for your small group work, we're going to focus on just one particular scenario. So let's say we have EMP over eastern United States. Electrical grid is destroyed, all the electronics that are plugged in. We can't pull fossil fuels out of the ground. We can no longer pump it through pipelines. The large vehicles, so they've actually done some testing to simulate EMP, and they found that larger vehicles tend to be destroyed by this, but smaller vehicles would still function if they can get fuel. But we have a problem of fossil fuel production and refining in this scenario. Also, water distribution and wastewater treatment would stop. And then from an agricultural perspective, it is possible to farm by hand, but in the United States, we might only get one-third as much food out of the same land that we do right now. So here's an example of what an electromagnetic pulse over the U.S. might look like. This is the intensity of the volt per meter. We'll get into the detail. So probably it would actually be centered over the eastern U.S. because there's more industry there, there's more people.
Would it hurt people also?
What's that?
Because electric impulse could affect a human body also.
So generally, the question was, does the pulse actually hurt people directly? Generally not. So it doesn't kill people directly, but it affects the infrastructure. All right, so now we're going to break up into groups soon. And what would be great is if each group does have someone with a laptop to kind of record ideas, or you can do it on paper if you want, but it's great if you do record it on a laptop, then you can send it to us if you feel comfortable. We're always interested in what people come up with. And then this scenario is, we're trying to think what might happen if we don't do any preparations. So if you are familiar with AlfEd's work on industry, then maybe don't talk about it so much if you think it would give it away. But you know, try to be honest in what you think would happen now with current preparedness. So we're only going to have about 5 minutes in the subgroup, because then we want to talk as a group with results. Have someone record. Think about someone who will speak about what the group came up with. And some questions to think about is, what would the reaction of other countries that still have industry be? Would it mean that they would help out? Would they not interfere at all? Or would they actually conquest, like take over? And then also think about, in this scenario, how much of a far future impact do you think it would have? Like, because it happens, how much reduction in far future potential of the humanity you think might happen? And this can be what we call cascading failures. Like, if then it goes poorly, you know, then that could have long-term impacts. Okay, so let's form into small groups.
Okay, so in this group, we had more questions. So we try to outline our ignorance, and the kind of topics that we discussed immediately were, well, one other industrialized nations like jump up to help, and a lot of questions revolve to, can they do it? In other examples, how fast can you put food in the US if you really were short by, let's say, half of the production or one third of the production? Other thing that we discuss is how fast and in what conditions does the order of society breaks down? Is the local state able to keep control over the people before they riot, before criminal organizations take critical parts of the political infrastructure under their control? And we also discuss differential effects of how this affects people from different social classes. So we have ignorance about these three issues, but that's what came to our mind.
Okay.
That's it.
So I think we'll move to the next group. Unfortunately, we probably only have a minute each because we have six groups.
So we talked about whether anybody would actually send aid to the US and Canada and potentially Mexico as well, given that we've got approximately two UK populations on the eastern seaboard alone that we would be without power. Would there be rioting? Would other countries actually send any aid to help? There's going to be spoiling food everywhere. One suggestion was that the US could sell somebody else an aircraft carrier in order to get aid back, which I thought was quite interesting.
Thanks.
So, is this okay? Yeah. We first talked about whether anyone would invade us, and we concluded probably not, because the Western US is still going to be up and running, we assume.
The what system is still running?
The Western US, okay. Like the Western seaboard. So we don't, and we have aircraft carriers and stuff, so like we're not at risk of being invaded, basically. The big hazards after electrical shutdown would be like anything like chemical processes, nuclear power plants. Those might not be such an issue because the graphite rods would drop into them. But like big risks of fire, because fire engines might be knocked out, and the EMP would maybe cause fires even. So that might be a very big current risk. I think that's what we got to, and chemical storage leaking, sort of thing.
Okay. And let us know if you do have any quantitative estimates of what your estimate of the far future loss impact would be.
So we were, I think, talking mainly about two areas. The first question is, as mentioned, is the government going to stay in control? Are people going to freak out? And especially the question is, like, probably is the military going to be kind of able to kind of keep control over the East Coast, or is that kind of the ratio of kind of, so we assume the military infrastructure will probably stay functional because you might think that they are at least in part prepared for these kind of scenarios and that the command infrastructure would stay stable, but would they be able to kind of keep control over the civil society, or would that be a problem? Second question is, would communication infrastructure still work? So we'd assume that probably civil, again, the normal communication infrastructure would break down, which would be a big problem, but maybe, again, that's on the military. Maybe they will be able to kind of, jump in at least, have local or quickly build up new communication and new ways of communication. That's it from us.
Thanks.
Can you clarify briefly what's meant by FAR future potential loss percent?
So the question is the FAR future potential loss percent. The idea is if, you know, one example would be if you thought we would have a loss of civilization, what percent chance would you say we would not recover civilization? Because then we would basically lose nearly all of the value of the far future if we never recovered. So if you think there's a 50% chance of losing civilization, and if we lose it, a 10% chance of not recovering, then you would say that's a 5% loss of civilization permanently. So that's like a 5% loss of our total potential. So that's one example, and I gave other examples of that impact.
In our group, we talked a lot about the short-term impacts, meaning immediate and communications and how people react, because we wouldn't actually probably know what's going on given the issue. Also, a lot of fleeing. I think once people do understand what has happened and where it's happened, people trying to get out of the East Coast area towards the West Coast, and any sort of logistics impacts that the West Coast might be impacted by due to the fact that things in the East Coast will no longer be working if there's like a logistics system that is based out of the East Coast. Canada's probably affected as well, massively. And also like cities versus countryside. Countryside is very rural in the United States, physically speaking. And possibly that could be a problem for them from logistics because they would be the least concerned, meaning cities would probably have more attention once aid does come in. But at the same time, depending on the time of year, they would be able to access food maybe locally, but then also their spoilage issues and whatnot.
Thanks. Last group.
Okay, so we started off as well with communication and thought about that. And we thought that most of military is probably protected against EMPs, so they would have important hardware for communication skills to reestablish them. And we've heard about an alternative that works with the mobile phones, because most mobile phones won't be plugged in at the moment of the EMP, so they would last like for another 2 days probably. There's like a fire shed up that connects phones, and it's a software or a tool that enables to send messages.
Yeah, so there's FireChat app is so it was created for situation that government turn off the cell service, but you can have peer-to-peer network between phones through Wi-Fi, and so you just need to install the FireChat app, but you need to do it before the global catastrophe. So maybe one simple thing, just recommend people to have FireChat app on their phones. And also we need to charge phones, and maybe mechanical chargers, we need something like this. And in that case, people could have communication.
But does that also require the Wi-Fi routers or routers to be working?
No, you don't need the routers. It connects directly one phone to another. No.
So it's created in especially in the way, so you don't need any other hardware. So you need, so if you have just two phones and many phones, they could so they work as routers for each other.
And how far can you transmit?
Basically the distance of work of Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, so it's like few tens meters. But if you have many people, you can send message through the net, or it could wait until it meets the needed person.
Or you could just yell.
Yeah, no, it works through the net to a distance.
Okay.
Okay, and then we had one more technical idea that nuclear-powered submarines wouldn't be affected by the EMP, mm-hmm. and they could come up and they have a reactor that could power
that's a good idea.
The cities, and or at least like some crucial infrastructure. And yeah, we didn't get that far. I feel like we in those close 5 minutes, but yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Great. Did you have a
directly a question to you? We also thought
We also thought about that maybe aircraft carriers could provide some electricity when they return from mm-hmm. other places. But then again, would there be grid infrastructure necessary on land, like transformers, to actually convert the electricity from the power plants on the carriers to the local grid? And if they were defect, then they don't.
Yeah, it would depend on the voltage in the generation, like on the ships. And but that's a really good question. I should look into that. Okay, well, great. Sorry you didn't have too much time to discuss and too much time to report back, but I think a lot of good questions were raised and some good ideas. So we're going to have to move forward to the next section here, where I talk about some of the things we've been thinking about of preparing for a scenario like this. Now, first I'll talk about if there were a global scenario, like we didn't have any industry at all, some things for getting more food out of the same land is, at least now we understand how fertilizer works. We can burn wood in landfills to create the phosphorus potassium fertilizer. We also would plant a lot of peas, beans, and peanuts because they fix nitrogen from the atmosphere. Hopefully we could continue to use improved seed varieties that don't rely on like continued genetic engineering. And we could potentially use farm animals that we currently raise for food for draft animals farming and for transportation. I'll talk about that more later. Also, we would ideally shift the type of crops to crops that produce more calories per hectare. Then the alternate foods from our other area of work, we generally define alternate foods as foods that don't require the sun. And so these are things like you can grow mushrooms on agricultural wastes and things like that. So we might want to do that. Also, we might want to clear more land for agriculture. The problem is that without industry, we don't have chainsaws. And so the way of doing it is you would girdle the tree, which means cutting a strip of bark around the bottom, which kills the tree, and then after a year or so it dries out, and then you would actually burn the forest. But this is a backup plan, and we'd want to do it in a way to limit biodiversity impact. But if we did all of these things, then even though we can't get as much food from the amount of land that we currently have in production, we actually could feed everyone several times over. And so a note on transportation, of course, ships used to be wind-powered. There was even a train here that was wind-powered back in the day. And so we would definitely want transportation because we want to move food to people or move people to food. They could also be kite-powered, might be better than sails. And then on land, the other option for rail cars is that they can be pulled by cows, one at a time. This one didn't work. But then, of course, there are many other needs than food, and we brought up some of these, like healthcare. Of course, the hospitals that are dependent on electricity, you're not going to be able to maintain. But just the fact that we understand the germ theory of disease, that washing your hands is important, we can create soap by combining animal fat and ash, and burn biomass to boil water to kill the germs. We would need to move to where we can get water by hand. We need to do sanitation. We can even do some birth control. We need to keep warm, so you can make wood-burning stoves fairly easily. And then for communication, there's a shortwave radio, sometimes called ham radio, that can be done without a large infrastructure system and transmit long distances. Here's an example of a transmitter. Now, many of these solutions that we just talked about could be relevant even in a 10% loss of industry scenario. But I think even if there were massive aid from outside, it's still going to take time to restore these services. So we would need to do some of these things. And that might involve importing vehicles, also importing the fuel to power the vehicles. And one big issue is that cranes for unloading ships, many of them are electric powered, but there are ones that are diesel powered. So if we can move in diesel-powered cranes to be able to unload ships, that would be very helpful. And then importing diesel generators, as you mentioned, maybe you have the generator on the ship itself, like a nuclear power sub or a ship. And then you'd want to import food as well. So now the question is, let's think about the same scenario, but let's say we spent, say, $30 million to actually have some plans ahead of time, have a shortwave radio system that could transmit in a catastrophe, and that we've tested out that even people who live in the city that don't know how to farm, that we could give them the right instructions to construct tools and actually produce food. So we'd need to run those experiments and then modify our instructions. So if we spent that money and got that preparation, now I'd like you to consider that same scenario and say, well, did it run any better? How much better? And then again, think about the focus. And you can answer both ways, you know, like how many lives we would save or how much we might reduce the far future impact. So same groups.
So we were thinking about the preparations for the problem of food and how everyone could have storaged some rice. And we've got an estimate like 300 kilograms of rice is enough to feed a person for a year. And in addition to that, we would have prepared seeds. And because you told us we have like tutorials how to inform people how to farm for themselves. And so with the seeds, depending on what seeds you have and what climate, you can have several harvests a year. And we thought because we have a lot of labor then, because normal jobs in cities are falling away in such catastrophic situations, that we at least that problem is totally manageable. It felt like that. And yeah, that was the basic of our discussion, and at the end we try to make an estimate on how much that would impact the future. And we've got a notion maybe not as much, because it's like maybe only stalling the development and not hurting the growth or the potential. Yeah, potential is a good word.
Okay. So you're saying, and we can switch to the next group, that that both scenarios would just be a temporary setback and we would recover?
We didn't say that. I hope you understand me without the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
In this scenario, when we have the tutorials prepared and the seeds and some... And in addition to that, some food. So we think if like food and survival is prepared to be... so it's not a problem for a few years, probably, then we could recover from that.
Okay, but are you concerned about not recovering if you were not prepared?
I would definitely be.
Okay.
I would give it a very low probability, but I don't know how low, and... that really makes a difference, right? Is it one millionth, then one billionth? But it's really hard to just intuitively guess.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll mention that that we're developing a model, a guesstimate model. So as you have more time to think about it, you'd be able to put in your own numbers to see how it works out. Now, the other thing I'll just comment quickly about storing food, yes, it would be great to store a year's worth of food, but then you're talking trillions of dollars if you want to do it globally. So we wouldn't actually be able to afford that, but definitely some of the other things we could do.
So we started out, I guess, discussing how effective it would actually be to have distributed this information. So we were unclear whether people would actually be able or willing to implement the information they'd be given. Maybe more so in rural areas, but that's even if you've done an education program, that doesn't mean that people will effectively implement it. It would be much more effective if local government is still functioning and has some communication capacity and can kind of manage that process. The thing we thought was how much this we thought in terms of food, even if it's possible to have enough food production to feed everyone, there might be a distribution issue. So it might be that cities, there's just too many people and we can't get the food in. And so rural areas or smaller towns might be fine. But in cities, it might just not be possible to sort out the distribution problem enough that lots of people don't die first. It's unclear what effect it would have on people's short-term reaction, because in some ways, having no idea what's going on is scary. But maybe knowing that the entire eastern seaboard has gone down is even scarier. But that managing the initial stages might be quite important, because actually a lot of damage to infrastructure and like just the order of society might happen then. And if that can be delayed, then maybe you can like avoid slipping into chaos rather than just delaying it.
Thanks.
So we talked about mainly two things. The first was with 30 million, the first obvious observation is like if we talk about US population, we've got like about 10 pence per person, which is not very much, but the places where we can maybe best invest it is maybe, for instance, train farmers. If you can't train every person, you can't realistically talk to every single citizen, and that's probably also not leading anywhere. Maybe good to go to like kind of hotspot places, or for instance, train farmers, like train people who would be important, and also like establish like communication systems, because you know, there's different questions. You know, what may be the biggest problem in the scenario where you have in this particular scenario, but we think probably with external aid, and because part of the US is still functioning, you would expect probably food supply be stable. You would expect probably there would be fuel and everything. So actually, making sure that the people don't freak out, that people are kind of ordered and no panic breaks out is kind of the most crucial thing in this this consideration. The second thing we discussed was to what extent it's sensible, desired, or likely that people will move from the East Coast to the West Coast or somewhere else. There would be arguments in favor of doing that, because it's maybe easier to then supply them directly in a place where there's working infrastructure. It's disadvantageous because you lose the housing that you already have on the East Coast, and maybe there's like political issues with like huge amounts of people kind of moving to the West. To what extent that's going to even worsen issues or help issues? Well, that's the discussion we had.
Thanks.
We were talking about rationing supermarket stocks in the short term and then securing grain silos and maybe finding a way of processing them properly to provide short-term relief. Supplies from the Western United States and Canada and maybe Mexico would help. And then getting all the transformers and stuff back online might take a lot longer, but it's going to be high priority, so maybe a global effort on that would be expected.
Thanks.
I think the only thing that we've really got to add to that is around how much less panic there's going to be, but there's going to be a lot of time involved in getting people to a point where they actually get new food sources in, getting people to sort out water supply, and then around people being moved, who's going to be prepared to let other people come onto their land. The initial landowners, would they welcome people with open arms? And it seems quite unlikely.
Thanks.
here we discuss a couple of ideas after we came up with this. So the first is, we do believe it helps to increase their chances, and the mechanisms that make that happen is that the centralized organization just is better at solving local problems, and then communication in general makes it easier to solve certain coordination problems, like avoid risk aversion by making people just actually start doing something as soon as they can. Another point that was touched here was that we believe that wired treatment at the levels that we do seems complex enough that it's unlikely to survive such a thing. And we somehow expect organizations and cities to become smaller. And finally, we believe that using how delay is scientific progress as a proxy for thinking about potential loss of civilization in general may be a good discussion, but we ran out of time.
Thanks. Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time for discussion, but wanted to wrap up quickly and then talk about financial mechanisms. So what another way of thinking about how cost-effective this might be is that proposals to harden the grid to solar storm and EMP are in the billions of dollars, like $100 billion globally. So, of course, that's the ideal scenario, that we prevent the loss of industry. But my thinking is that if we can protect against a large part of the loss of life and potential far future impact for much less money, then that can be more cost effective and maybe the first thing we should do. So we're going to include a PDF of this on the website, so you'll have the guesstimate model if you're interested in doing cost effectiveness. This is just some summary we haven't talked so much about, but if your primary concern is the present generation, I think there's potential to save lives in the present generation as well. Could also protect biodiversity. Then, if you're interested in helping out, it would be great to raise more awareness about these issues. If you're interested in supporting AllFed, either with time or money. And a bunch of papers we did. And then at the end, if you're interested in eating some insects, we have some.